Hello and welcome to Grumpy Gamers. You're here with me, Pete, and along with me this week I have Ben.
Hello.
And Eddie.
Hello.
That's... Again, you sound a bit like Clifford the dog when you do it sometimes, Eddie. It sounds like a bark.
Clifford the dog? Yeah. I was going to say, does he talk? I've never really seen it.
The bark, wait. Eddie. It sounds like a bark.
Oh, okay.
I didn't think it sounded like a bark, but it was quite muted. It wasn't your usual energy.
Oh, apologies. Hello!
That's better. There we go. That's what
he's back, baby! Yeah.
Sounding like a human and loud. That's perfect. Right. So, I mean, I think firstly we should start with a little bit of feedback from last week's podcast, which obviously... Wait. Oh.
No, carry on, sorry.
No, come on, Ben, what were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was just going to jump into it, but then you carried on your sentence, so yeah, that's fine.
Right, yes. Well, obviously we were talking about games that make you rage quit, much like interruptions from Ben. And yeah, a couple of people came back to us, didn't they?
They did, and it seems like FIFA is the constant trend. I mean, I said FIFA, you said FIFA, Eddie. John on Twitter said FIFA. He said that he's putting the bin outside and he was throwing the game away, and he called it a cunt. And then realised that his neighbours were putting the shopping in. So that's a lovely story. And then Obsidian Gaming also said that he once threw his PlayStation out the window after playing FIFA.
Whoa. And then I've got to admit, I've had the urge. Do you ever have the urge of like smacking the TV or your computer screen?
I've had that a few times. I know what you mean. It quickly tailors off, though.
Yes, exactly. As long as I survive that initial few seconds, then I'm fine. But I've got to admit, I've been awfully close where I've been like, ugh. For example, I have smacked my desk a couple times until once I had a drink on it and it spilled all over my keyboard. And since then, I've never banged on my desk ever. I think I only have a few
times. You've got to learn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that was a good... You know what? I deserved it. Because the first few times I went like... Because as you guys know, but the listeners don't, I'm a very passive person, aren't I? I'm not aggressive at all. So whenever I bang my hand on the table, I would always go, oh, you're such a small little man for doing that. So, but I never got the repercussions until everything went over my keyboard and I went, that's what you get, you little prick.
I agree. Yeah. You need something to go wrong, but not be so devastating.
Yeah.
It needs to just be a reminder.
Yeah. Mm.
But yeah, but this throwing a PlayStation out the window is then... You must get the realization afterwards of going, damn it, I've really missed it.
Yeah. Imagine
what do I do now? Read a book? I don't know. Well, what do
imagine if
think?
You have time to watch it fall as well. You just throw it and then be like,
oh no.
Like, as you watch it going now.
Yeah. catch it. Yeah. Get lucky somehow.
Oh, that must have been a terrible moment. But, but, I mean, that is also the only real rage quit amongst all of us, I think. That's the level you've got to aspire to in rage quitting.
Yeah.
But
that's level 100.
That is level 100. But in other news this week, we also... Ben, you were on Pure Dead Gaming, weren't you?
Yes, there was a podcast that came out today, which is the 1st of August, The Afterlife, the recap of July. So I was on that with Craig and Donnie, and it was a good episode.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, excellent. So check that out 2 days ago, because I feel we have to get in our weird way of ordering things when we do this. Yeah. And of course, I think it's you guys streaming on Thursday again, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll be streaming again. I assume Eddie will be streaming.
I'm up for it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, lovely. Go. We're streaming together. Mm. We're back in.
Showing how average people win. Excellent work.
Well, we
didn't win
second.
Last time, did we?
No, we came. We got lots of.
Yeah, and we got loads of kills. I had a double digit game, didn't I? 10 kills. So
yeah, we did. Well, we were playing more aggressively. We were playing SMGs only. SMG so we did a bit of a challenge run. Mm. So instead of playing normally, we. Jack imposed that we could only use SMGs.
Mm. Fantastic.
So
it was tough.
And that challenge run did get us a second. Mm. So
okay.
Can't complain.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a small complaint you could be made there. But yeah. I get your point. Okay.
Yes. Actually, can complain. Shouldn't have been using SMGs at the last bit.
Probably would have come first. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, anyone can make that
absolutely.
Point. But but we've also dropped a new video on YouTube, which was the top picks for August, wasn't it, Ben?
Yeah, absolutely. Go check that one out. Our YouTube channel is now getting videos on the reg, So yeah, go check us out.
Don't give
us
a
on the reg.
On the reg. That's what people
really?
Say.
Really?
On
I think
the reg.
That's quite
I
think, cool.
Yeah, I don't think anyone said that since about the time of the release of 8 Mile.
Yeah, I'm quite disappointed that you said that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm just, you know, I'm not down with the kids. I just live in my own world.
So we can tell. Yeah. We can tell. Fantastic. But there will be another new video this week as well.
There
is,
will.
I think, what he was trying to imply with that message.
Yeah, because we're doing it on the reg.
Oh,
so.
My God.
So, yeah. Well, new videos to come.
Just to get away from that phrase, we're now moving on to the news, guys. So quick news first.
Just as we do on the reg. First, PS Plus games for August have been announced. So that's Yakuza Like a Dragon, Tony Hawk 1 and 2, the old remakes, and Little Nightmares. So, one of the best months I can remember, recent memory anyway. So, good standard PS Plus games there. Second one is Square Enix. After selling their Western studios to Embracer Group the other month, there are now rumours that Sony are interested in buying the remaining Japanese arm of the business.
Mm-hmm.
I've put that in news, but sounds like a bit of a rumor to me. So,
we do that a lot, Ben. That's fine. That's
all our news.
Yeah, that's so. Second quick news item that was. Third one. This is a good one. Neon Giant, the developers of The Ascent, have teased a DLC is coming in a 10-second video that they put on Twitter, I think, and it said "Gear up for a new contract." Now, remember, The Ascent is on Game Pass, and it was our official Grumpy Gamers 2021 Game of the Year. Yeah, it was last year's Game of the Year, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm. Well deserved.
So, bloody love that game. So, yeah, DLC for The Ascent coming out. Bloody lovely. Talking of DLC, next one. Mario Kart DLC, the newest tracks, will be available on the 4th of August. So, a day after? Yeah, after this podcast comes out. So, tomorrow. Tomorrow they're available.
I don't know why we always do this, because you do know, like, no one listens to it. Like, it's not like everyone is waiting for the day one. For example, I listen to the podcast normally a couple of days after.
But well, actually,
same with, like, when
Eddie,
I watch golf, like Rick Shields, his videos come out on Friday, so I watch it on Monday. If he went, like, well, today, do this, it's just weird.
I mean, well, actually, 70% of our listeners listen on the day.
Really? Wow.
Just not Eddie, it would seem.
No, I'm a few behind. I'm actually on mine and Ben's one at the moment. Yeah,
nice.
Oh, great episode.
Yeah, great episode. Go back and listen to it again. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, lovely. Right, next one. So, supposedly, we knew that Resident Evil 8 DLC was coming in October.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, but it is coming in October. Also coming in October for Resident Evil are additional accessibility options, which are being added.
Okay.
What those are, I don't know. But they're being added. The news, guys. Next one. Sony have announced a new controller for mobile phones, which you clip on the sides, called Backbone. And it's DualSense inspired. And it's $100, which is fucking insane.
Of course it is, though. Yeah.
But yes, there is a controller. I mean, there are already controllers out for mobile, but PlayStation have done their own.
Mm.
Very expensive one. Talking of PlayStation, kind of. Phil Spencer,
that's
head of Xbox.
That's a really bad segue. You were trying to force a segue for no reason, because I fucking hate segues.
You haven't let me do the full segue. So,
well, I know what it is. Phil Spencer's most anticipated title is God of War, but that's poor.
Right, brilliant. Yeah, right. Talking of PlayStation, head of Xbox, God of War. Yeah. Anyway,
which is a PlayStation game. Is that how you're going to end? So it was a segue.
That was the segue. That's on you that didn't work. Not on me. I feel that's completely on you. But anyway, dude. Phil Spencer, head of Xbox, his most anticipated title is God of War,
which is a PlayStation game.
Thank
Talking
you,
about Eddie. PlayStation.
There we go. It's also implemented 1440p support for monitors.
Mm.
Fantastic.
Mic drop. And the last one that I have here is that on Wednesday, today, there will be a Pokemon Presents event, which is much like a Nintendo Direct, but just for Pokemon. So if you're interested in the new one that's coming out, Scarlet and Violet, then that will be covered in today's Pokemon event.
All right. Eddie, do you think giving Ben 9 stories in quick news is kind of overdoing it?
Yeah, I think giving Ben too much of anything is overdoing it.
I mean, when you say giving, I'm the guy who does all the prep for that. So you gave me nothing.
You took everything.
I took everything. Yeah. I took from you everything. Yeah.
And this is what I was going to say. I think it gives him a bit too much ego. But he's backed that up immediately, so that works wonderfully well.
Why do you think I just come in now and again with a little dig? That's all I do on this podcast, is just put you two down. Just
remind us of our place when it gets
exactly. Else the ego would just get massive. All right, I'll go first with the big news, though. Meta, or Oculus, Quest 2 has had a price increase. Pretty upsetting news. I saw this on Eurogamer. Meta, formerly Facebook, has announced a major set of pricing changes to its Meta Quest 2 VR headsets starting this August, this month. Or next month, if you're listening to it a month ago. Both the 128GB and the 256GB versions on the headset will rise price by $100. Meta said in a statement last night that $300 to $400 and from $400 to $500, respectively. As something of a deal sweetener, Meta has said it will bundle in a copy of the popular Beat Saber, usually $30, with new headset purchase from August until the end of next year. So why the price is changing? Meta's statement blames the cost to make and ship our products, which have been on the rise. By adjusting the price of Quest 2, we can continue to grow our investment in groundbreaking research and new product development that pushes the VR industry to new heights, Meta continued. This is quite sad. It seems to be the trend of everything these days. Just prices are going up with everything, so it's quite sad to hear this go up, especially when I reckon I'm only a year away from buying one of these VR sets. So what do you guys think?
It's fucking mental, right? Though, isn't it? It's mental that you can put the price up. It's like, that is completely opposite to anything you ever think. Like, what, hardware's been out a while. Let's put it up in price. Sorry, up.
Yeah.
What are you doing? And this does not make for great reading with the PSVR 2 coming out, because now they have license to charge more.
They do, and they have quite a good reason to do so as well, which we learnt this week as well, because PlayStation released their financials, didn't they?
Yes, tell us about those, yeah.
Yeah, so, well, Sony is still to see the promised acceleration in PlayStation 5 production, as their latest financial results have shown. So up until June 30th, and 3 months preceding that, they'd sold 2.4 million consoles, which is about the same as last year, where they sold 2.3. And a lot under what they were forecasting, really. They were expecting something like 18 million consoles this year, just to put it in perspective. So they're well behind on that quarter.
That's quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah, well behind on the quarter anyway. So it basically means they have 3 more months to shift 15.5 million consoles.
Easy.
Sorry, 3 more quarters, to be fair. Actually, I misspoke. 3 yeah. more quarters, that's pretty bad. Anyway, the company has not revised the target for this year, though it did say it expected to sell fewer first-party games than it had originally hoped, which would impact the bottom line. 2022 so far, of course, has seen the launch of Horizon Forbidden West, Gran Turismo 7, God of War Ragnarok, and The Last of Us Part 1 is set to arrive in autumn. And they aren't selling as many copies as they really wanted to. So it was something like 47 million copies in PS5 and PS4, and that's like 15 million less than the same time last year. These are quite significant chunks, aren't they? Like, it's a significant amount of things going downhill. The one thing that is going up is PlayStation Plus subscriber numbers, though, which is up 1 million from this time last year at 47.3 million people on there. Does anyone else think that's a lot?
I do think that's quite a bit, yeah.
That's more than I'd expected them to have, you know? I don't know why, but it is.
Same, yeah.
Yeah, and though they did note that it is down by 100,000 from last quarter. So the expectation there is that the cost of living crisis is causing some people to curtail subscriptions, which we are seeing everywhere, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, but we don't know as yet how many of those subscribers Sony's converted to the newer, pricier extra and premium tiers. Ben, which one are you on again?
I'm on the the medium one, which extra. Is extra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought you probably would be. And as a final note from all of this, total PS5 sales now stand at 21.7 million units. So that's how many PS5s are out there, which, again, I think is quite low.
Well, I mean, this is all to do with constraints. I mean, the PlayStation, yeah, they haven't sold as many. And I don't know, I just assume you can't read much into that, because as soon as they are available, they would sell. They sell immediately, don't they?
It's, yeah, that's true.
You can find Xboxes in the wild, and and they're there, but PlayStations are just absolutely not available. And I think they would just meet demand if supply were there. So, and the only reason they haven't sold is just because there's still shortages on
chips,
on the actual hardware components and stuff, isn't there? So, that part you can't probably not read as much into. I think the interesting thing is probably the games. Now, obviously, they've sold fewer PS5s than they would have liked.
Yeah.
And so their first-party games have shifted less than they would have liked. Maybe people wait because they go, look, I want to play Horizon, but I'd rather play on a PS5.
Yeah.
So there could be a bit of that going on.
15 million of that compared to last year.
Well, and also remember, this last year was still coming off the pandemic,
in
the pandemic, all of that kind of stuff. Like, people were buying more video games. The video game industry had such a massive boom
over that period.
So it's fucking huge. So maybe this is just stabilizing things out. Now, it may just be that these results are lower because of everything we just mentioned, and so reality would be they'd be higher, but maybe they were always going to be down on last year. You know, maybe that's just unavoidable because of just the pandemic stuff.
That is a fair point, but at least it's not giving them a reason to raise prices on anything, you know.
Well, that's the great point, because, you know, people are talking about raising prices. You know, we've just seen Eddie's just had that news story, and there are rumours that PlayStation could be thinking about upping the price of PS5, and that has been suggested. Their CFO came out and said that they haven't got any word on it at the moment, so he didn't confirm or deny anything. The reality of things is, if they put the price up, nobody could buy them anyway.
Yeah, well, that was actually my thinking, though, is it's a good time to do it is while people are still really hankering for them and can't get hold of them. Why not slap an extra 100 quid on it?
Yeah, but one way to do that, they could learn off Nintendo, because Nintendo put the price up of their Switch fairly recently, because they released an OLED version and they put an more internal hard drive space. Now, by doing that, the cost to them wasn't an awful lot, but they could charge more. And if PlayStation just upped the storage capacity, maybe a few hundred gig or something like that, then they'd have a justification, maybe something that goes a little way towards it.
Yeah, and memory has got cheaper as well.
I don't think Sony need advice on how to charge more for something that isn't worth as much. That's their whole fucking business plan.
And to be fair, if they do, just go to the team running The Last of Us remake and ask them.
Just there, like, you
how,
go. Just go.
How
and
do you
see
get away with
what this? What difference are you making? Well, we've told people from the ground up, but fucking hell, we're doing nothing, mate.
Yeah, Eddie, actually, you make a great point. They can just do whatever the fuck they want.
PlayStation 5 remake, that's what they call it.
Yeah, exactly.
At the price. Love it.
Yeah. But we've got this, and we've got their PSVR 2. And PSVR 2 is surely going to shift, you'd think would help shift sales of consoles when they are available as well. But the PSVR 2, I would not be surprised if that is north of £500, which would be
depressing.
Fucking insane.
That
would be fucking insane. But I wouldn't be surprised if that were the case. I mean, with the Meta going up in price to where it's gone to, it's given Sony license. Now, arguably, the PSVR 2 is going to have features that the Oculus or the Meta Quest 2 doesn't have, and it's going to be supported by more developers and all that kind of stuff, you know. There might be license for them to charge more.
God.
And that would be insane.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah. Eddie can tell us how bad it is in a year when he buys one.
I'm not going to at this rate.
Yeah, not at that price.
Not those prices. Not what, you'd have to pay 600 quid for a PlayStation, 600 quid for a PSVR 2 at that time?
Jesus. Yeah.
Maybe call them a lottery.
Well, can we move on to more games? You know, something less brutal on my wallet.
Yes. Yes. Let's move on to games. So GTA 6, there was a lot of talk about GTA 6 this week. Now, there's a report from Jason Schreier at Bloomberg suggesting that the game is at least 2 years away, but it is being made under better conditions than was reported during Red Dead Redemption 2, which they talked about 100-hour work weeks and things like that. Supposedly, the series is going to have its first female protagonist in a Bonnie and Clyde-inspired Latina character, which is... I mean, this is what I want to hear, because I've never really been into GTA, but that's the type of thing that gets me right in. Unlike previous games, GTA 6 developers are said to be avoiding jokes which punch down on marginalized groups. To help development, the initial map has been scaled back with a focus on modern-day Miami, but future cities and expansions will be added after release, and I think people are quite excited about that. So that's the main story of kind of what was in this report, and that's the actual content. Then everyone gets hold of that and goes different ways, but I just wanted to comment on what appeared to me to just be on the internet just straw man arguments that were there. Like, people were arguing about this female lead choice, saying that there are people out there saying, oh, that's not why would a female be this isn't GTA, all this kind of stuff. I think it kind of spanned from like maybe one tweet somewhere.
God.
Yeah. And then everybody in the world goes on this massive virtue signaling to say, oh, there's so many great games with female leads. Yes, we know. Everyone knows. Like, that. If that is a take, it's a shit take. Don't worry about it. Like, I, for one, say this is a great move. I mean, it's well documented on this podcast that I
always play as a woman. Yes.
I always play as a woman. Yeah. It's one of my things. Twitter and the internet are just a weird place when it's like a dog with a bone, but the bone doesn't exist sometimes. That was my perception of what went on anyway. Like, it's just people arguing against somebody who's not really saying anything. But the second thing, was comments around this punching down on marginalized groups. So it was, again, suggested that GTA may be going woke with this stuff because they're going against what they usually do. Now, GTA is often a parody. It's like a social commentary, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so there was a little questioning around that choice of this comment about avoiding punching down on marginalized groups. But I think the people who are saying about GTA going woke are just generally being ironic, and they know that's not what's happening. The thing I think people have to remember when they go off on one on the internet is that these things, especially that line that was put in the Bloomberg report, it's probably just a passing comment. Mm. It's probably nothing particularly noteworthy, and it may even be said to look favourite so that Rockstar go, oh, that's quite a nice thing to say, whatever. Yet you don't know how these things are supposed to be taken. Then a huge conversation ensues online, and you're like, wow, does any of this really... GTA isn't going woke. GTA is going to be just fine. GTA generally has very good writers, and I'm sure it's going to be a massive and amazing game in a couple of years' time.
And I don't think... People seem to think that elements like that somehow made the game what it was. It's like, I'm pretty sure the good writers made the game what it was, not the specific individual comments. So,
if you
trusted them this far, surely you're going to trust them for another one anyway. Like,
a GTA will still be its core self. Like, that will happen. And as you said, it's a social commentary. Mm. It's a parody. It's just that they won't say things that are viewed as shouldn't be said. That's
exactly.
fine.
Exactly. That's fine. Yeah. Well, that's nice and positive. So that's it's on me to lift the spirits then with some news on Knights of the Old Republic, which has been delayed indefinitely after sackings from the demo. Oh. this is with a quote directly says that it's in serious trouble and delayed indefinitely, according to a new report. Bloomberg said developer Aspire fired the group's art director and design director this month and told staff the hotly anticipated remake is on pause. So the decision comes after Aspire, which has been working on the game for 3 years, demoed a vertical slice to Lucasfilm and publisher Sony at the end of June. Apparently, Aspire bosses told staff this demo wasn't where they wanted it to be. Yeah, we don't have direct comments from Aspyr or from Embracer at this point, who obviously own them. Embracer in the news twice, that's interesting. We don't often hear about them, even though they're absolutely massive, don't you think?
I know.
Yeah, they're vast, but you don't hear that much about them. Yeah. But anyway, apparently Bloomberg continued this by saying that a disproportionate amount of time and money had gone into the demo and that the project clearly wasn't sustainable. Aspyr had targeted a late 2022 launch for the remake, as we knew, but a more realistic target would have been 2025. Cool. So yeah, we're not getting that anytime soon, are we? We might not be getting it at all.
That last comment that you said, Pete, about the 2025, I think that was reportedly from developers on it saying, like, 2022, more like 2025.
Exactly, yeah. And basically, this now leaves Aspyr scrambling to find a new project, and Saber Interactive, which is also part of Embrace's ridiculous umbrella of developers, had been drafted in to help and may assume direct control, which... The way they phrase, I mean, the phrasing on that, that's a direct quote, by the way, from another article, is exactly like Mass Effect 2. Assuming direct control is literally word for word from everywhere. But yeah, during a fourth quarter report earlier in the year, Matt Karch had called the KOTOR remake a massive project and said they'd gone full to make this the best game that they can make. When we acquired Aspyr, we knew from the start that they would require our assistance, and Saber has tremendous expertise in creating these type of projects. So we're fully confident that this game is going to be fantastic, but it's a massive, massive product, and massive products require a lot of effort and a lot of time to make good. Yeah, I mean, hopefully we're going to hear more about this. I really hope it doesn't just drop off the face of the earth at this point, but it's not looking good.
You know, supposedly they've been working on this for a couple of years anyway.
Yes, yeah. Well, I think they even said Aspyr had been on it for about 3 years.
I'm disappointed because Eddie, you haven't played Knights of Old
Republic. No. In fact, we talked about this when we first heard about it, and this could have been my way into it. Yeah,
I know. Can you imagine like making a ground up version of the game? I reckon it's such a huge undertaking.
Yes,
yeah, like that game would be so difficult to make. That a new remake of that game, and the expectation around it as well.
Yeah,
but
you know, though,
this says something quite tremendous, really. That you show off the demo, you're showing off the demo to your bosses. You go, right, here it is. Here's our vertical slice of the game. Here's our brilliant. This is what we're pleased to show. Fired. Right, great.
Yeah, I mean. It must be said for me, I kind of wish BioWare still had control of it. Simply for the fact that the engine for Andromeda, Mass Effect Andromeda, would kind of work pretty well for Knights of the Republic.
Would it now still hold up?
Well, that's a good point. We'll never know, apparently. But we may never know.
However, there's probably a new engine for the new Mass Effect.
Yeah, so, that's true.
And I assume that that's being made by BioWare still. So, they would have had something good. They've got their hands full with the new Mass Effect. But this is just really disappointing. Like, we were really looking forward to this game.
Yeah, yeah. And I still will be. But it's a long way away.
I got some bad news, Pete. It's been suspended.
Yeah, like, that
I refuse
phrase,
to think it's over. All right.
That phrase, indefinitely.
Yes.
It's like, that's devastating, isn't it? Like...
It's not positive,
What does that mean? Do you just mean a few months and then you get kicking again? But why use that phrase?
That's normally not indefinitely? What indefinitely means, no.
No, no, it's not.
A couple weeks later, it's back on, release date December 2022. Yeah.
So what we're talking about, like early 23?
It'll still beat Starfield.
Nice.
But yeah, no, sadly no positives though at all. But in a minor positive for anyone who's still interested in Cyberpunk, by the way, do you see the trailer for Edge Runners dropped today?
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, it dropped literally about 2 hours ago. So when I say today, I mean Monday, guys. For those listening.
It dropped two days ago.
It dropped about an hour ago this evening, so you can check that out at your own leisure. It's on YouTube.
Oh, was it good?
It looks pretty darn good, although I could not find English audio, which is probably my own fault.
when does Edge Runners come
September.
Out on Netflix?
September. Yeah,
not cool. Too I'm looking forward to that because it might just give Cyberpunk that little boost and
exactly.
give some of us a
Well, I think
wanting to get back in.
One of the great strengths of Cyberpunk was the world as well. So more in that world is great. I'm very keen on
absolutely.
That. But,
absolutely. Yeah,
but having talked to death about games that are dying or a long time away, should we move on to ones that are actually coming out?
That's really cool.
Thanks.
I liked that.
Mm-hmm. I knew you would.
Yeah.
You like absolute crap like that. Right, moving on to new releases. The first one of the day, South of the Circle, coming out on PC, PlayStations, Xboxes, and Switch, August 3rd. South of the Circle is an emotional narrative experience exploring the relationship between Peter and Clara, Cambridge academics caught up in the political conflict of the Cold War. The story focuses on the weight of life choices between career, true love, and the desire to keep our promises. This released on iPhone and iPad on October 2020, and now it's making its way over to consoles, so that's a pretty good start already. It's a story-driven game. It's fully motion-captured characters and art style is simple, but it looks nice. It's quite... I don't know how to describe it. I don't really know a game like the kind of art style. But look it up. It looks pretty nice.
It's like hand-drawn style, isn't it? It's,
yeah, but solid colours.
Mm-hmm.
Like that okay. kind of... do you know what I mean? Like hand-drawn can seem a bit like... This is quite prominent. The figures and stuff are quite prominent, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
if you look at some of the videos as well, there are some scenes that look stunning. Like in its
I
own
really
weird
like
way.
The design, actually. I really, really like the look of it.
Yeah. So it's all about basically making choices, and it sounds like it's all about career and true love, which is interesting because I assume most people choose career unless it's a woman, and then maybe true love. I don't know.
Whoa.
I mean, I would probably just...
See, you have a problem with a bad segue, but making a terrible, terrible comment live is fine with you. Whatever, you know, move on.
That's a hot
take.
Sorry,
would you choose the true love every time, would you? Sorry.
No, I would never play this game in a million years, but...
if you ever chose anything romantic over any other decision, then you give me a call, because I'm going to say you're having a stroke.
Yeah, no, I'll be in Broadmoor in that situation, Eddie. Like, it would be long past the chance of anything but an asylum. Anyway.
I think it looked good, so there we go.
I think there are plenty of people who really like it. I'm not one of them. But
yeah, I think this is one of these. So when I did my research, there was a big article on saying... That's the point. We haven't mentioned what the feature is about. But anyway, this article said a lot of games focus on mechanics and things to do. This game is not one of these games. This is a just a very simple but nice-looking, a good story game.
Mm.
Which I thought, that doesn't interest me at all, but it might really interest some other people. Nice. And to our listeners, our features on basically ranking what makes a good game. So,
yes, indeed.
Yeah, so that this game kind of feeds into that nicely. That's probably why Ben said it looks nice and me and Pete aren't interested. But anyway,
yeah.
Moving on, Hard West 2, coming out on PC August 4th. Hard West 2 is a journey to the heart of darkness in an American West. Take control of supernatural posse and catch the mysterious ghost train. Outsmart, outcheat, and outgun your enemies in the turn-based tactics game set in a Wild West world where nothing is as it seems. This game is... I'm getting huge Wastelands vibes, which isn't a bad thing. I think that's one of my favourite games ever. It's quite interesting because this kind of has weird aspects to it. Like, you've got witches and, like, I see some people using magical abilities, which is a bit like Weird West, which I reviewed a while back as well. It's got XCOM combat. I know I always say that, but I think we all know what that means by now. It has the usual mechanics of these kind of games, you know, like covering and you can buy different equipment and upgrade them. But it also has this, like, card hand system, as in cards like poker and stuff, where you gain, like, cards and then that gives you boosts and buffs to your squad and stuff, which really looks quite interesting. Okay. It might be quite fun to, like, trying to find a different card and, like, if you get two doubles, then it'll give you a better buff. Nice. So... Yeah, it looks quite interesting. There's a free demo on Steam. And I had a look at the first one, and it's quite well rated across the board. As in, it's got all like eights, but that's across like some proper, you know, gaming websites and stuff. So, you know, legitimate. I will say now as well, I shouldn't really advertise this, but the Hard West 1, or Hard West as it's called, is only £1.50 on Steam right now, up until the 4th of August. It's on a 90% sale.
So up until the release, nice. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah,
oh, that's cool. This game looks really smart, doesn't it? I think it looks a really decent game. I think your comparisons that you made to Wasteland and to Weird West seem right on point.
Yeah, absolutely. I was always going to say this game looks brilliant because Wasteland was one of those games. It was an indie game at the time, and I saw it and I went, "Oh, this looks okay." And after playing it, I went, I need to buy more indie games, and I need to try things that I think look okay. And this I've got huge vibes of that. So highly recommend to anyone who's interested in these kind of games to pick it up, because it does look damn good. Mm. Yeah. All right, moving on to Turbo Golf Racing. Coming out on PC and Xbox August 4th. Turbo Golf Racing is an arcade-style sports racing game for up to 8 players online. Slam into oversized golf balls and race your friends in explosive dash to the finish flag. I think the obvious way to describe this is it's Rocket League, but golf.
Yes, it is.
Everyone's going to call it that. So basically, you got your car and it's all about... I don't know, because golf is all about taking a shot and then... Obviously, the golf stops, but this isn't it. It's racing. It's the first one to get the ball in the hole. But there are other things, like the maps aren't exactly simple. You've got loads of like boosts and jumps and whatever. And they also, if you play Rocket League, they now and again have a weird mode where like you get power ups and stuff.
Yes,
this is basically that as well. You get weird power ups. I've seen some of the power ups are directly ripped off of Rocket League, but hey ho. This could be a lot of fun with your mates, but we have seen a million of these types come out since Rocket League and died a painful death very quickly. So, yeah, I'd be interested in playing it, but only if my mates were playing.
You know, it's coming to Game Pass already.
Mm. I think that was a good move.
Yeah, me too.
Great move, yeah. It's a great move for these types of games, isn't it? And I think the Rocket League, kind of the so obvious rip of Rocket League... will work in its favour. It needed that. Like, I think with that kind of Rocket League link, with it being on Game Pass, I think a lot of people are going to try this game. I mean, Pete, you're interested in trying it, aren't
definitely you? Yeah, I think it'd be great for them.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I do agree. I mean, all people that play Rocket League hardcore, and there are a lot of them, they'll jump over just to give it a try, won't they? So
yeah, I would expect so. Yeah,
a break between rounds, why not?
Nice one. All right, next one. I've just seen the name. Timesia? That's right, isn't it?
We'll go with that. Yeah, that works.
Yeah, that would have been... That's better than what I was thinking.
Well, I thought time spell like that, isn't it?
It is, yeah. That's a good option.
Yeah. Timesia. Brilliant. Yeah, nice. Coming out PC, PlayStation, Xboxes, August 9th. Timesia is a grueling action RPG with fast-paced combat and an intricate plague weapon system. In a kingdom where death spreads... play as a mysterious character. No, that should not be a comma. That sounded weird when I read it like that. Play as a mysterious character known by the code name Corvus. Prey upon your enemies, wield the power of disease, and find the truth in your own memories. This is kind of a Devil May Cry, Dark Souls looking game. Cue Ben correcting me there.
You always put Devil May Cry next to Dark Souls.
Yeah, because Devil May Cry is obviously the better one. So people go, oh, Devil May Cry. Oh, what's Dark Souls? Let me type in Dark Souls. Oh, that's that Devil May Cry ripoff.
It's not even... There's no point. There's no point.
this game, you could turn into a raven. I guess that's quite exciting. And like fire daggers at the enemies. You can upgrade and modify movements and plague weapons to kind of build your very own playstyle. So, yeah, it's one of those games, but it sounds like it's got its unique feature. I have no interest in this, but do you guys?
I would be interested, although I do find it painful that you can turn into a raven and... It's the word for the name is Corvus. That just annoys me, which is the word for crow or raven in Latin. Like,
Nice.
Just a bit too on the nose, like that's a bit brilliant. On the nose, guys. But yes, I am interested. If it's on a good sale, I'll get it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it looks really good as well. Mm. It's like definitely a Souls-like, and it's like a gothic Souls-like, bit Bloodborne-esque, but it's got a bit about it. I'm interested to see how it reviews.
It's quite similar to Devil May Cry as well, Ben. Just see
it. Yeah, the better game.
Is it? Right.
You know, Ben, because you've probably played it.
I have played Devil May Cry. Yeah,
great game.
Great game.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. It's okay. Yeah, Devil May Cry 5 was okay.
Fine.
Like the simmering anger. Yeah.
2 Point Campus. Coming out on PC, PlayStations, Xboxes, and Switch. Wow, I did not know Switch until I just saw that. What an interesting game to play on Switch. August 9th. Build the university of your dreams with 2 Point Campus, the sim with a twist from the makers of 2 Point Hospital. Build, hire staff, and run an academic institution packed with wild courses. This is a management sim. 2 Point Hospital did very well. That was kind of seen as theme hospitals, kind of, you know.
Spiritual successor.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly the term I was looking for. Yeah. So this could be fun. I was a big, big fan of Theme Hospital and Theme Park. Was it Theme Park?
Honestly,
though, the moment anyone mentions Theme Hospital, I just have the first few bars of the tune Fortune run through my head. That bit. Because I once lived with Eddie and it was the soundtrack to life, whether you wanted it or not.
I remember I once plugged in my iPod into one of my laptops because I didn't really use it. It was my girlfriend's. And I saw it like uploaded the figures, and I listened to Fortune over 1,000 times.
Yes, all in the period we lived together. It was.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Yeah. 1,000 times I listened to that song. Listeners, I know you're thinking, I don't really know. Type in Theme Hospital Fortune and just listen to it on repeat. It is the best game song ever existed and ever will exist. Ever. There you go.
On the back of that, Eddie, are you interested in 2 Point Campus?
you know what? It's weird. I saw this and I thought I should be because I love the old games. But to me, I'm looking at the videos and it all seems silly to me. I mean, this is really interesting because I know that Theme Hospital was silly back in the day. But this kind of made me think, am I thinking it's silly? Or maybe I'm just older now. Maybe my bar is higher.
Yeah,
could be. The childish nonsense.
It must be said, my first reaction to this game when I was looking at it was, the moment it says, build the university of your dreams, I was there like, what dreams do they think I'm having? Like, I've never considered building an academic institution. That's not there. That's not, one of them. No, that's
Pete,
really not
your dreams, Pete. Come on, dream big, Pete.
Yeah, what the hell are you dreaming about?
Eddie, maybe that's the career I'd give up for true love, like in the game earlier. Maybe that's the one.
Right, are you guys going to play this? I think
no, God no.
Oh,
I would play it. If it were cheap enough, I can't justify paying a full price for that game. It's quite a big game, so yeah, exactly. I'm not going to be able to play it straight away because I can't justify the price of that type of
game. I reckon 30.
Yeah.
If it was on Game Pass at some point in the future, I'd be down to try that, absolutely.
Perfect PC Game Pass kind of game. Yeah,
absolutely, like 100%.
All right, last one, Lost in Play, coming out on PC and Switch, August 10th. Go on a feel-good adventure with a brother and sister as they explore dreamscapes and befriend magical creatures. Lost in their imagination, Toto and Gal must stick together and solve puzzles to journey back home. This whimsical puzzle adventure game will make you feel like you're playing a cartoon. Ben, were you muttering something about my pronunciation whimsical?
You went full Stewie Griffin on that.
Whimsical. I think that's the only word that you should actually pronounce the whim.
Say cool whip, Eddie.
Cool whip.
There we go. Now it fits.
Oh dear. So this game is like it's a simple sideways scrolling cartoon adventure game with puzzles. I'm not going to shit on this because it's clearly made for kids. So I don't, you know, that's fine. I'm just not the target market. And the puzzles look not only fun, but some of them actually look quite educational. The kind of games that you kind of see in preschool and stuff. So, yeah, I can't imagine either of you like this game, but you know, I'm not mad that it's out.
I think its art style is really nice, and it would appeal to kids though, because it definitely does look like a cartoon. It looks like playing a cartoon.
Massively so, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Very good.
Yeah. We're not the target market, but it looks like a decent game. That's the
yes.
key.
Yeah. Yeah. I really. Yeah. Well, let's put it this way. I know none of us are fathers, but. Would you? I'd be quite happy if my kids wanted me to buy this game for them. Do you know what I mean? Like the puzzles look like they would develop their mind, and it looks quite harmless. I'd buy this for my kid.
Yeah, I think it looks well developed. Mm.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
yeah. I can see that.
Plus, it'll get them into computer games, and then I can give it to my kid just to be gaming all day. Like,
get them into RimWorld.
That's it. Just non-stop RimWorld.
Warzone right. Duos.
Oh, yes. They'll be better than playing with you. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Double your KD in a week.
They'll learn for one, yeah.
Right, that's it for them new releases. My pick of the week, and it's probably because it's only got the Wasteland vibes, but Hard West 2. I think that would be a goodie. And I'm toying with getting that £1.50 Hard West 1 game.
I haven't got rid of that tab either, Eddie. I'm just sitting there looking at it going, like, that is a good price.
That's Eddie price, that one.
Yeah, that is
a throwaway price. That is very nice.
Yeah. Don't feel guilty about it if it's a crap game. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. But for now, we are onto what we've been playing. And I'll go first because it's a game you've all heard about. But there is something new about it. Which I bet no one was really expecting to hear Warhammer 2 again after the release of 3.
Oh, no, not Warhammer
2.
That's amazing. That's something I've never heard about.
But this is it. After the... And I mean, 3 is already out.
That's a bit
catty. Yeah, it was. I think the condensed anger of Ben's is going to come out at strange moments now. But but no, I've been playing Warhammer 2 again. And the reason for this is that one of the most long-awaited mods for that game has finally come out. I mean, they literally beat the bell by a month, considering no one is going to be back on Warhammer 2 once IE comes out. But they got it out. This is the Nagash mod, which is one of the most influential characters in the entire setting. And this is developed by a team of modders, and they released it on the 21st of July. And an initial reaction to this is, holy shit, no wonder it took them so long. Like, they have gone into full development on modeling for each of the characters, on tech trees, buildings, army rosters, character trees and quest progression for this new faction they've created. It essentially feels like one of the CA DLCs in its own right, but it's entirely made by modders. And yeah, I mean, I've played about 150 turns of a campaign in this. It's really fun. The main character behind it obviously is Nagash, and he is as ridiculously overpowered as you'd think, but it's still incredibly hard because literally everyone hates you, and that only gets worse as the game goes on. So
does it glitch at all? Like when you get, is it completely seamless? Does it work?
So far, absolutely no problems at all. There's an occasional clipping issue on the campaign map with Nagash's character model, but you barely notice it. I mean, half the time I've scrolled away the moment I've moved them if it's not a battle. So you don't really notice any issues. And the stuff they have done, particularly in the custom battles, he's got his own lore of magic, all of which is animated and works perfectly. Some of them are ridiculously huge. There's one where it conjures like a million bats, and they all work, and they all are individually modelled. It's insane.
Do you think this is a crying shame that it is just a month before Immortal Empires comes out?
Somewhat so, although the reason I wanted to mention it is because there's been an awful lot of buzz around this. Like, a lot of people have seen it and gone, well, thank God it came out now. Especially because the idea of porting this into Warhammer 3, I imagine, will cause the modding team slight fits. That would be, I think that's probably a pretty big job.
It'd be a rework. It'd be a complete rework.
Exactly. They've spent multiple years on this already. So that's, yeah, I think it's a while away from Warhammer 3. But I'm glad they got it out. And if anyone is still waiting for Immortal Empires next month, then go play this. It's the best way to spend your time until then.
Lovely.
Mm. Cool. I've actually been playing a shit ton of... I was going to just caveat this at the end, but leading on, Total War Three Kingdoms. I'm still smashing the shit out of that game, honestly.
It is a great game.
I'm scared to look at the hours that I've put in. I know, how many hours was it last week? It was a lot. So
But,
it was a lot last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, I love it. Absolutely love it. It's
that's really cool for a Game Pass game as well, man. That's fucking
well,
awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I was eventually going to pay for it. On day one. I had it on my wish list on Steam, so it was. But Total War games, have you noticed that they're very, how do I put it? Well, let's be truthful. Stingy. They never go on big sales. Like the Warhammer 2 and 1-1, it took like 2 years to go on a more than 50% sale.
Yeah, it did.
Pete, you obviously messaged me straight away. I was like, yes!
presumably, Eddie, you can't get mods for Game Pass, though.
That's a very good question, Ben, and I don't know the answer. I looked it up, and it was very vague, but basically it said no. I wouldn't know how to. Pete, I don't think... You've tried on other games, haven't you, with Game Pass?
Yeah, it does work on things like Crusader Kings 3. Right. You can get mods there, but Paradox do a very good job of developing their own launcher, so it goes to that launcher and then goes in. So I believe with this one you'd actually have to be looking at manual install using the mod folder in the game directory, which would be a lot more difficult. But I don't know for sure, and I would think that it's something that might well come in the future potentially if it stays on Game Pass.
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't looked into doing... like, because Steam's really good with the workshop, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
You just go onto your game, you click on workshop, and then it comes up with all the... And you can filter it to whatever update. You can sort it by most popular. It's so well done on Steam. Yeah, if they have that on Game Pass, that would be fantastic. But there's probably, I don't know, there's something to do with monetization in there that they'll probably... There's probably a reason why they don't have it already, if you know what I mean. I don't know. Maybe I'm just making up shit. But I've been playing MLB The Show 22.
You said that last week, that you might go on that one.
I'm surprised.
I was playing a bit of it last week, and then I thought, oh, I can't come back with Three Kingdoms again, so I will actually chuck some hours into this. Developer San Diego Studios and published by Sony Interactive Entertainment. It came out only in April 2022, which I was quite surprised with. Because, you know, all the FIFA games, they say, like, 22, but they release it at the beginning of the season, don't they? So it's, like, September 21.
Yes. Yeah, they do,
yeah. So, yeah, I was surprised at how new this is. For those who don't know, it's a baseball game. The mechanics are quite cool. For the listeners, I've never... I play... You know what's funny? I'm probably the only English person I know that I used to play baseball as a kid, but I don't know the rules anymore. I used to play as a kid, and I haven't touched a baseball bat since. So I don't really know anything about this, but I watched it on stream, and I thought it looked a lot of fun. But anyway, the mechanics are quite cool. The pitching, you need to follow a circle, which is, it's really well done, because you need to match the pace. You choose what pitch you have, if it's like a curler or a fastball or whatever. And then it gives you a circle, and you need to basically follow the direction around to whatever direction it says. And you actually have to match it with the pace as well. And I had it on the hardest difficulty, obviously, so I was all over the fucking place. But it's really, really rewarding, because when you do pull it off, you go, oh, sweet, that's cool that it did that whole twang over there. The batting, you need to aim with one of the sticks, and you actually need to time your swing as well, which is really cool. And it's really like, if you're a little bit early, it will go to the you know, left or right, depending what handed bat you are. So basically what I'm saying is, it's really responsive, in the sense of, if you're a bit too early, it will go in the direction you think it would if you actually swung a bat. I have looked at it, and they have done that on purpose. They've done the whole mechanics to that. So that's quite fun. The fielding is just you need to follow the man, which is really disappointing because the rest is really intricate, but then the fielding is literally you just need to move your man into the circle. And then you just press a button, and it's like one of those time buttons to make sure you chuck it in the right direction.
Yeah, so it's like a QTE type.
Yes, thing. Exactly. Right. Yeah. And if you get it really off, then I've never, to be honest with you, I've got on the hardest difficulty and I've never missed, so... It's a bit disappointing, really. But, the thing about this game, I think where they've really chucked the money in is the visuals and the atmosphere. It's fantastic. It's really, really good. Like, the stadiums, you can hear the background noise and everything. It's all pinnacle when you hit home run. And I was playing this game for probably over 20 minutes, and I was just messing around, trying to get the mechanics right. And then I just out of nowhere just hit a home run, and fuck me, it's amazing. Like, the crowd goes mental, it zooms in, or maybe you'll have a cool animation. And I can imagine if you're like playing a season and you're like really nervous about maybe not getting an out or whatever, you must feel like a fucking king doing a home run. This is where I kind of trailed off. So I did a lot of practice. I did a lot of random games because I really wanted to. I didn't want to start a career and then like find myself learning at what level difficulty I'm at. So then I feel like I've cheated the first few games of the season. So yeah, okay. I did a lot of those random games and I got into franchise mode and holy fuck, it's detailed. And that's where my concentration just disappeared because, Ben, you said last week about you couldn't be asked to learn all the, you know, rules and all the intricacies of baseball. And I thought, well, you know, Chris, you know baseball and you also play a lot of NHL and NFL, so you'll know. But this is, like, some of the terms. I had to spend 20 minutes just on fucking Wikipedia looking at stuff.
Eddie, so. This is what I worried about in terms of the franchise mode because it looks... Yeah. really good. Yep. It looks like properly detailed, like you're saying, but to that extent, if you're not part of the sport, that makes it very fucking difficult, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And let's put it this way. The gameplay is a bit too samey for me to... I'm all in going balls deep into a game. Like, spending hours on research. I did it with Crusader Kings and never touched the third one. But, you know, I'm all in for that if the gameplay is really good. But I found myself in these random matches that I was doing, like, as soon as I wasn't batting, I was bored as shit because it would take so long. Like, especially when you get two strikes and then the guy just hits it along the floor and you go, oh, I'm going to have to do that all again. And then you get one out and you go, oh, my God, I've got two more of this. Yeah, it's one of those that the gameplay mechanics are pretty samey, and to me not good enough for me to go all in. But I reckon if you're a baseball fan, this game would be incredible because they've got the visuals, the atmosphere, the feel of the bat whacking into the ball. I think they've done a really, really good job. The franchise mode looks so detailed that I bet if you're a proper baseball fan, then this could be your game that you wait for every year. I have no doubt about that. So yeah, I'm not going to shit on it because I'm not, you know, a baseball fanatic. But it's not for me. I'm going to move on. You know what's quite interesting? I randomly ran out of shows on my Netflix and my Amazon, and I got onto All or Nothing. Have you seen those ones, the sports ones?
Of course. Love All or Nothing.
Yeah. Great series.
Exactly, and I've watched a lot of them. I've watched Tottenham, the Man City. I started the Juventus one. But then there's the Toronto Maple Leafs one. So I've started watching that. And then just at the same time as me losing interest in this MLB show, I went, oh, I could play the NHL game. So, I've reinstalled the NHL game. So I'm probably going to get into that. It's cue next week where I say it's too complicated.
Yeah, and you've been playing Three Kingdoms the entire time.
I've been playing Three Kingdoms nonstop. Yeah. Exactly.
That said, can we on that note take a moment to agree that baseball is definitely the worst of the four American sports?
But I think Americans even admit that. I do think Americans even I see it in like cartoon.
Is
jokes
it America's
all the time.
Game? Is that what
it's America's
it's
pastime?
Pastime. That's right, it. Yeah. Their pastime. Right. Pete, how how would you feel if I said, isn't baseball the Americans' version of cricket?
No, it's much simplified and worse version of cricket. And actually, you know, the two competed up until World War II. They were both almost equally popular at that point, which is really weird when you think about it. There's even a really famous American cricketer who has like one of the biggest bowling records. But they just never carried on after World War II. Shame, really. They went to baseball instead. What a loss. Anyway.
You know, like in these types of games, I really like the franchise modes or whatever. I don't actually want to play the game. I just kind of want to do the...
You want to manage your player?
I know what you mean.
So did you, at the end of this month, F1 Manager comes out. And I've recently been playing the F1 game that's on Game Pass. I think it's 21. It's the game before. And I really enjoy it. They've got like a similar type franchise mode on there. It's quite detailed, whatever. But I actually don't like doing the races.
Yeah.
So I think just a management version of these kind of franchise models or like F1 Manager is going to really appeal to me because I don't actually have to... It's more like Football Manager.
Ben, honestly, you can on these games. Like, I know on the NHL ones, obviously MLB, I didn't get that far, but I highly assume they'll have the same. You can sim the games.
Yeah, I know. But then they put less focus in on that. I think that's why I like Football Manager, because I can't be bothered to play FIFA, but I like the management sim-esque version of it.
Honestly,
I'm really looking forward to F1 Manager because of that fact.
I do think, though, if you made Ben a game where he could play as Ari Gold from Entourage, that would be his game. Like, just managing all these many and varied stars of different sports, but never actually having to play the sport or be in a film or a TV show. Ben would love
fantastic.
It.
Pure Ari Gold sim.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. I used to in the old days play the NHL games, and I used to sim every away game because the season's so fucking long. apart from the playoffs, because that's where it got exciting. But yeah, I used to use it as a management sim, if you will.
Yeah, get you.
Love it.
Yeah. Shall I move on to my game then?
I think you should. You're the only one left.
Yeah, so I played... to start off, I just say that I do have Xenoblade Chronicles 3. I did buy it. and I'm a couple of hours in. No real impressions yet. I'm really liking it, but I'll be talking about it next week. But my God, that game is 89 on Metacritic.
Wow.
And it's genuinely a Game of the Year candidate now. Like, it's up there. It's like the second highest ranked Game of the Year. It's like Elden Ring, Neon White, and Xenoblade. They're the three highest.
Surely so, not that many people can have completed it yet, though.
Oh, no, God, no, because it's 150 hours. No, but reviewers have had it
for
weeks.
That's true, yeah.
I know the Eurogamer guy played a shit ton
of
hours on that game. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it, but I bought it because not many massive releases coming up, so it might be nice. I just want another Elden Ring, you know? Just want another one that you can put 100 hours into. But anyway, this week I have been playing Endling Extinction is Forever. It's the one that we saw at Nintendo Direct way back when, and we really liked the look of.
Yeah.
And
the Fox one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But this is, for people who don't know, I think it's one of the best indie games that you've probably never heard of then. It came out on the same day as Stray, and I think that is the issue, because this has flown completely under the radar. Even on the Pure Dead Gaming pod that I did the other day, I mentioned this game, and they hadn't heard of it. Like, it's gone completely under the radar. But yes, it's a survival game. Beautiful art style, I think.
Yes.
And it's completely different from what I expected. So you play as the last fox on Earth, and you have these fox cubs that you're trying to keep alive. That basically boils down to the survival mechanics are feeding your cubs.
Right.
That's basically what it comes down to, teaching them a few skills and feeding them. Very simple in that kind of mechanic drive there. I thought this would be more of a standard narrative linear format from what I got from the trailers and stuff, but then the delivery of its narrative comes through exploration and uncovering information or these kind of like memories about, or not really memories, there it uncovers information on event that's explaining a traumatic event at the start of the game.
Right.
So I don't want to spoil anything, but it's a really innovative way of doing it, that you kind of explore new areas and then every once in a while you get a thing which tells you more about the story.
Yeah,
that's especially in a game where you don't talk.
Yeah, that's got a bit of Lost Ember to it as well. I quite like that. Okay.
Yeah, it seems to me quite innovative, and you start off on this like really small map, which expands over time, and the environment changes as well. So the map only gets bigger, and because humans are destroying the environment, it's changing constantly, and things are moving.
Right.
There's a day-night cycle, so it is a survival game, as I said. It's a day-night cycle, and you have to return back to your fox den each morning. You basically are exploring everything through the night. The more paths you explore, because the paths are linear in themselves, but it's like an ant farm kind of thing in terms of different paths you take, and there's a mini-map. Well, actually, there's not a mini-map. It's a full... You have to press the button each time to bring the map up, which is a little annoying, but yes. So the more days you survive, the more the map kind of unlocks, and the more you discover, the more information you get, and the further you get to your understanding of this traumatic event at the start of the game. This game is emotional. Now, if you're not so Eddie, when you mentioned your new releases, what was that game right at the start of the new releases? South of the Circle. You summed it up perfectly. That's not your type of game, but some gamers do have that, and it's exactly the same. It's like a narrative focused emotional journey where the mechanics are relatively simple. And if that is the case, you're not really interested in that, you won't get the most out of this game.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely fine. But if you do like kind of those emotionally driven narrative games, it's fucking good. Like, it's really, really good. I don't know how it does for something so simple. It's a combination of the art style, the simplicity, but more than anything, your attachment to the fox that you're playing and these fucking cubs that you're trying to keep alive. Like, it's stressful. It's stressful. Like, at the beginning of playing this game, I was only playing it in short chunks because, like, I was due a few days, and right, that's me for the moment. Like, it's stressful. Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely... And I finished it today, and it's the first game that's ever made me cry.
Oh, whoa. Wow.
It is fucking good.
Whoa, like, I thought more games have made you cry, to be fair, but
that's... Didn't we do a feature on this? I thought a few would make
me. I've been emotional and maybe had a, you know, start a bit of a well up, but this was a, you know, I had a weep. Wow. This is
ball
the first
on
one that I can remember that I was quite like that. And it's not a difficult game.
Mm.
That's not the point. There are a few points where, like, your path is blocked coming home, or you don't have to get somewhere and time's running out and you're fucking pegging it round a different way or whatever to get back, and your cubs aren't following you very quickly and all this kind of shit. Mm. But it's more of the fear of fucking up. That's the issue, rather than actually fucking up. But
yeah.
But you can fuck up and get caught and everything. But it looks great. The artistic direction is absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. The story is very emotional. And when you're not playing it, you kind of want to continue that story because you know it's short. It doesn't last forever. It's only 5 hours long. It took me 5 hours. You have to bear that in mind in what we've talked about recently about cost of games and hours to play and everything.
Yeah.
But this is right up there with the game of the year. This is right up there. And if you're not into those types of games, it will not hit for you.
Mm.
It won't. It'll be a complete miss. But if it sounds like you're into this type of game, put it on your wish list. Wait for the price to come down. It did start off quite expensive, I think, for a 5-hour game. It's over £20. I think if you get it on PC, it's £15 on Instant Gaming. I think that's the lowest I've seen it for. I find it very hard to recommend 5-hour games for that kind of price, but it's bloody good. Like, I've even said to myself, like, this is the type of game that I've been asking Kirk to frame.
Wow.
Because it's like, this is an indie darling. It's flown completely under the radar. There's little, very, very little on it on the internet. Like, so little on it. It's got an 81 on Metacritic for Switch and PlayStation, and 83 on Xbox, and the user score is also 8.1. Like, it's a good fucking game.
Do you think they kind of messed up a bit with the release timing of this? Like, with the non-stop media attention that Stray has had. Do you think maybe if they just delayed it a month and then went, here's a Fox game?
I honestly think they fucked up in two ways. I think they were on the wrong Nintendo Direct. I think they needed to be on the one after, or the one that's just happened. They were too early. People forgot, except for us. And you're right. There was another animal dominant game that was released, but it was a PlayStation exclusive that is bigger. And so the shine was taken off. And this is obviously, this is multi-platform, obviously, as I said.
Yeah.
I wish more people would play this, but Stray is free, essentially, if you're on PlayStation with PlayStation Plus. Yeah. That's a huge fucking thing. Like, I know it's on Steam, and I know it's doing really well on Steam, Stray, and it's £25 or something. So, yeah, that's fine. But, this deserves to be played by more people.
Oh. Well, I hope it is at some stage, but, yeah, it's too expensive for me for now.
It's too expensive. I get that. If it came out of a lower price point, but it's almost like I'm caught between that opinion, because if it came out at like £12, you go, oh yeah, no, that's a good game for £12. But also, that game deserves to be more expensive than £12. Like, I'm caught between two minds there. But if ever this came to a service, a subscription service, it's like a please play this type of game.
Okay. Interesting. Wow. And it's up there with Elden Ring for you.
Well, it's a positive. Yeah. Emotionally, as I said, it's emotionally gripping. And but, you know, how can you compare a game like Elden Ring to this game? It's a weird. You have to mentally kind of play those gymnastics to compare them, don't you? Animal games can get you in different ways, I think. really weird, but.
If you were to,
yeah, there we go.
If you were to pick a couple of elements about it, Ben, what would you say were the best?
are we segue?
Oh yeah, we are.
That's really bad. Yeah.
Let's segue into the feature, then. I'm sure it can shoehorn in there.
But it would have been so much easier if you just said it was better for gameplay or for the atmosphere, say. But we won't.
The graphics are amazing, though. The graphics are wonderfully simple but beautiful.
There we go. That's what we needed. Because we are, of course, for our feature, going to rank what makes a good game. And that means I'm handing over to Eddie to give us the elements.
Another one of mine. Basically, I mean, no, it's just all these. It's all based off a rant, because this one is my rant. This is my constant rant whenever I have a few beers of what makes up a good game. Because I've noticed that we all have different opinions. So this one is breaking down the grumpy gamers. What they think makes you a good game. You know what, I'm going to talk to Kirk and Jack about this as well, and I'll get their intake, and I might let you know next week or the week after, because it'll be interesting what they know. But for this week, you're going to get our threes. So what I've done is I've broken it down into five areas. You guys haven't complained about it after seeing them, so I assume you're okay with it. So number one, I've put gameplay/mechanics. Pretty self-explanatory. Number two, story or lore. I've put lore because obviously with some games, like strategy games, there just isn't a story. But I think having a lore, having a background is important. Mm-hmm. Number three, graphics or visuals. Ben, you just mentioned that. Number four, and I noticed that you didn't complain that I put these into two different categories. Number four is atmosphere or music.
Yeah, I do like that. I like that.
Yeah, Pete, I thought you would like that I've made it separate to graphics and visuals, because there are some games that they nail one and not the other, don't they?
So. Massively, and somewhere it's more important than one is more important than the other.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, there you go. And number five, this one's controversial, but difficulty or objectives. So this could be kind of, I guess this kind of feeds into replayability. It could feed into missions and things like that. I just thought this one is quite important, because without this side of the game, some games that are really highly regarded could be quite shit. So there's your five. Gameplay, story, graphics, atmosphere, and difficulty, really, breaking down. So I've got three questions for you, gents, and I'll answer the first one, just so you got an idea. I want you to rank from one to five of importance one being highest and five being lowest, what you think the most important thing is for a game.
Mm.
All right, so I'll go first so you can have time to think about it. Number five, I think... Well, no, I'll start with number one because it's the most important thing, is gameplay and mechanics for me. I think for a game to be a good... I can excuse all the other four, really, if the game has good mechanics. There are so many games I can think of. I mean, the main one is that fucking zombie game that everyone says is shit. What's that one? Ben, you've played it. Dead State. Dead State, the mechanics of the actual game itself is brilliant. And everything else about the game, everyone will tell you, is shite. But fuck me if I chucked hundreds of hours into that game. Number two, I think...
You're talking about State of Decay.
Oh, sorry. What did I say?
Dead State.
Dead State. Okay. You were mixing up State of Decay and Dead Space.
You know why? It's because Dead State, look it up, guys, is actually an amazing indie game. It's so amazing. They stopped developing it, and you can't actually play it even if you bought it. But wow. Fuck me, that was a good zombie game. Sorry, State of Decay. Number two, I've put difficulty, objectives, and missions, that kind of thing. Because I think that's really quite important for me as a strategy game player, for the replayability. Number three, atmosphere and music. Yeah, quite important. Four, graphics and visuals. I think you can make a good game without them. And five, story and lore. It's great if those things are in it, but don't really give a dump.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Wow. Okay. But this is... I'm going to be very different to you immediately. But it does get a bit tricky because some of them tie together more than others. Like atmosphere and music really does fit. But in some cases, like atmosphere is influenced by the lore. I'm thinking like Elden Ring, Ben. Atmosphere and the lore are really heavily tied in that one. So it's tricky. I do agree with you. I think gameplay mechanics is crucial. Absolutely crucial. So I'll put that at one, but I'm probably going to link it to story and lore because that's the other thing that will make me play a game is if I go like, I want to play that story. Yeah, done. I'll play it. So sort of joint first there, but you could put story and lore at two and I wouldn't mind either. Then atmosphere and music. I think regardless of how difficult a game is, if the atmosphere is awesome, I'm probably going to enjoy it. And then difficulty and objectives would come into it. Again, I think you're right in that it's really important in strategy games in particular, but I kind of link it to gameplay there. You see why I get a bit tied up? Because half the gameplay in those games is the difficulty of them. And then for last place, I think you can make every game without good graphics or visuals.
I'm glad you've said that last, because this all stems from my rant of how graphics don't equal good games. But before I go on to that rant, carry on. And Ben, I'd like to hear what you got to say as well.
Is it on to me?
It is.
Got more? Well, I am in agreement. So this is going to change again. So I'm in agreement on the first one. So gameplay and mechanics is the top notch
thing
for all of us. Cool. It has to play well.
Yeah,
but just off the back of Pete and your rant, Eddie, your potential rant, graphics and visuals do matter a lot to me. They don't have to be good in the sense that they don't have to be like, but they have to be clean. They have to. So I would say RimWorld has good graphics.
Oh, okay. Because it's clean. Yeah.
It's professionally done. It's clean. What puts me off a game is when it takes me out of the immersion. All that immersion juice is just thrown onto the floor. I'm not covered in dripping. It. It's all...
That's true. All the RimWorld figures with no hands or feet really do. They keep your immersion going. They soak your immersion juice.
You're talking about realism, but I'm just saying good graphics. Good graphics and visuals. And I think RimWorld does look visually quite nice.
It does.
So I do need that, especially with modern gaming. I think I do need decent visuals. I would say the story or lore is number three for me, in so much as a story can carry a game. So like we've just talked about with Endling, the mechanics and gameplay take a backseat in that regard, because the story is just so compelling, or what they've built up, the world that they've built up, with your investment in the characters and things like that is far more important in that one particular example, when that can carry things. So for me, like, those three can carry a lot. Music, for me, perhaps I don't value it enough because it's a passive thing. Often, atmosphere and music is usually passive off the back of other things. Maybe I don't put it with as much value, but maybe that is tremendously important. But I've got it at number four. And lastly, number five, the difficulty factor. I'm more about, you know me, I play a lot of different games. I always like to be playing different games. Yeah. I'm not really massively into replayability. If I do have a perfect type of game in my mind, which that would come into play on, but in general, it's last on my list, I think.
Okay. I'm quite surprised with that, because obviously your favourite games are all the Dark Souls games, aren't they? And of course, famous for its kind of difficulty.
I don't think they're difficult. It's a different type of game. It's a different type of challenge. As I said, you view it as difficult if you view dying as like defeat. But I don't think Dark Souls is necessarily about that.
All right, fair enough. All right, okay. Second part, I want you to think of your most favourite, well, some of your favourite games. Does that hit the mark with all five of them? Mm-hmm. Or is it just the importance of, you know, your top one or two? So, for example, with me, I think we all know my favourite game of all time is RimWorld. I think my numbering of one to five is quite important there, because number one for me, gameplay and mechanics. RimWorld, in my opinion, is the best game of all time when it comes to mechanics, from like the details and all the mathematics going behind the scenes of all your actions is why I love that game so much. Number three as well, the atmosphere and music. I go back to RimWorld day in, day out because of the music and because of the atmosphere. I feel nice playing it. I play it when I'm in a good mood, because I'll play it when I'm really sad or I'm hungover and I just want something to feel good to. And quite interestingly, four and five, the graphics and visuals of RimWorld aren't exactly competing with some of the AAA games. And of course, the story and lore of RimWorld is non-existent whatsoever. So I think it shows that if my top one or two or three hit it out of the park, then I don't really. I can look away for the last two.
Eddie, off the back of what you said there, like, one of the things that puts me off playing Kenshi more is actually the graphics and visuals. Like, I'd much rather play RimWorld than Kenshi, just because
it's choppy.
It looks like dog shit. This
feeds nicely into visuals as well. The reason why I never went back all the time to Kenshi is because it's very sad-looking world, isn't it?
Really sad.
Very sad. Like, when you run into the market, it's not like, oh, this is a good venture. It's, I'm going to die, and this is horrible. I just don't want to die.
It's depression central, yeah. It's not easing
anyone's
anxiety.
Just running through a hellscape, yes.
Anxiety, yeah. Like, I live with anxiety constantly, and that's not helping it.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's before you even play the game. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I think you make a good point as well, Eddie, because I'm not going to pick a specific. I'm going to go, let's look at grand strategy generally for me, because that's clearly the one I spend 90% of my gaming time on. Most of them have complex or interesting mechanics, like every single time that's a thing. You look at any Total War game, you look at any Paradox game or the Endless Space games, any of that complex interesting mechanics, normally a really good lore, but also a chance to craft your own story. And that's one of the things I think RimWorld does really well as well, is that you make your own story, and half the time they're more interesting than ones that could be written for you anyway, at least to me. And they've got great atmosphere. The music's normally on point. The background to it, the fact that you view everything from so far out so you actually feel like it's grand scale, works really well. And it also means that the graphics don't have to be that great when you're viewing it from that far away. Some notable exceptions, like Warhammer 2 has some incredible graphics in the battles, but they don't need to be that good for this type of game. Yeah. And difficulty normally has a ridiculously massive scale in these games, so it's less relevant, because you could play it on easy and have fun, but you could also do what we do and play it on really hard difficulties and suffer endlessly.
Oh yeah, yeah, I'm on legendary right now. Yeah, I'm suffering.
It's painful. Yes,
everybody hates me.
yeah, exactly. It's honestly, it's one of the biggest jokes in Stellaris is getting to the end with a 25 times crisis and just going like, "Well, it doesn't matter how well I've done, I'm just dead. I'm just dead." Like, there's very little you can do against that kind of enemy. So yeah, that's I think why I've ordered mine the way I did too. Yeah, is cool. Because it's just the value of different parts of the game, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, I think it's a good question, this, because the order that I've got there, it does actually match up with the games from the back end of the PS4 era, when I'm talking about Last of Us 2, Spider-Man, even God of War, that type of, those types of games. My list there for gameplay mechanics on those three games, absolutely brilliant. Like the Spider-Man game, fantastic. The gameplay, the swinging, all of that kind of stuff, they absolutely nailed it. Last of Us 2, I think, has some of the best melee combat in any game that I've really experienced, especially a story-based game. And then graphically, those three games were also exceptional. And I am a sucker for PlayStation, Sony exclusive quality of graphics. Absolute sucker for that. And they all nail it on the story. And that was the key. And The Last of Us 2, especially for me, I know a lot of people hated that story. But I thought it was really damn good. And I really liked what they did. I really liked Abby as a character. And at the end, I was rooting for Abby. So they do some great things. But my issue probably comes from the fact that my gameplay preferences are changing all the time. And I think the more that I've done this podcast with you guys, and the more that I've developed my thinking, hear about different things, whatever, I am going away from those single player games more and more. And I think that ranking would change as a result. And I am usually a narrative single player guy, but in my mind, my perfect game is actually like a PvE looter, single multiplayer kind of looter, maybe looter shooter game, a bit like Destiny. Like, I love Destiny.
Yeah,
I played a lot of Destiny, but I'm really interested in Redfall next year. I am really interested in Diablo 4 because it's that type. This, like, another game where you can kind of go on missions, get loot, get in and out. Like, I've always been interested in The Division for that as well, and I did try it, and those types of games have the potential to be my favorite types of games, and that would change things up, I think. That, and the story doesn't matter as much, really, as long as it's passable. It's more about the gameplay loop. Gameplay is still then the predominant thing, but it's pretty much the main thing. So gameplay loop would overpower everything in those types of games. Changing styles, because I also think that a lot of these big companies are looking towards multiplayer games, and it's probably going to get into one at one stage, aren't I?
Yeah, I would think so. They're going to try to anyway. They're going to try and get you into one.
Yep.
All right, interesting. The last question that I have for you is, I don't know why we always end on these kind of dark tones, but if all future games had to exclude one of the above, which one would you keep out of all games and why? I'll start, and this is hard. I've actually put my third place, Atmosphere of Music. I do believe
every game... No, fuck you, stop.
I do believe every game needs good Atmosphere of Music, and I think it is the core thing to so many good games, like... what's the Ori games? Oh, the atmosphere and music.
Yeah,
I think if you took that out of that game, I think I would have got very bored very quickly. But yeah, to be honest, I wouldn't be able to play games without graphics. As in, like, if it was so shit. If we're talking about like the Mountain Blade graphics back in the days, imagine if like new games, if Starfield came out with Mountain Blade graphics.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mountain Blade. After your rip-roaring reviews on Xbox, I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to give this a go.
What a game.
It is fucking... It's an insult to your eyes. I can't... Oh, my days.
But see, this is a harsh question, because if there's one thing you can kind of say you can't take to zero, it's graphic and visuals. Like, because yeah, you maybe, have to be able to view maybe don't it say, through some medium.
Maybe don't say take to zero, just have as bad.
Yeah, bad. Yeah.
In that situation, it would be graphics and visuals for me that I'd bin immediately. Because I can still... I played Civ 2 a few months ago and I fucking loved it. I played Final Fantasy 9 a year ago and I loved it. And that that's not bad, is pixels though. As hell, though. So much of that is heavily pixelated. You know, it's not a... It is a pretty game, but not at all by the standards of now. And I don't feel like I'm losing out in that. So
I'm surprised, as a strategist, you're not choosing atmosphere. I know you love atmosphere music in games, but my point being is... I know that you, same as me, sometimes even play strategy games while watching a TV show.
That's what I was just about to say, Eddie.
I quite often
play it with the music off.
Yeah. I could, no, the music's still on. I normally have an earpod in. This is okay, what I do okay, these days. Fair. I have an AirPod. I stick that in, and then I've got the music in one ear. Yeah.
All right, then. Fair enough.
Yeah, but I do understand what you're saying, and I think when you've played a game for a couple of hundred hours onwards, you don't always need the music. I get that, but... Mm. It's so fundamental to so many of the short games I play. And you mentioned Ori is a good one. But you think Hollow Knight as well, in terms of the atmosphere of that game. Elden Ring, I mentioned the atmosphere. That's one of the big wins for it in my eyes. That atmosphere overall is one of the biggest things in it. I still listen to the Mass Effect music just because of the atmosphere it conjures. Like, and I've got a playlist with 100 different game songs on it just for their atmosphere. So I couldn't do without it in full.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I played a game not long ago. I've forgotten the name of it. But basically it was like where you could build up your own village and it was first person, you walk to other villages. I talked about it probably about 6 months ago on this pod.
Going Medieval?
No, that was fantastic. It was actually way before that, and this was an indie developer. But what's interesting is I thought the mechanics were brilliant. But my God, it was like someone took Skyrim and took all the atmosphere and all the music out.
Right.
I know the game you're talking about. Yeah. It was ages ago. It was a year ago.
Oh, was it that long ago? But I played it for probably a week and I just went like, I can't come back to it. So I do see the importance of it.
Yeah, I think the crux is probably that some games just demand... heavier, they lean more towards one. That Elden Ring is a perfect example where you say, because the music and the atmosphere in that is just so impossible. It like that just changes everything. Capture. The boss battles and fucking that final battle, like the final boss in the game, like that when it comes in with the theme
comes in, that's insane.
Oh my days, it's amazing. However, as a handheld gamer, I'm going to go with what Eddie and I were saying, what we thought you did with your laptop. I often play just with my Switch and I've got something else on or whatever. So I'm happy for the music to kind of go to one side. Now, obviously, I do play a lot at my desk on monitor.
Yeah.
Play all of my consoles there, but preferably it'll be handheld. And in that case, I'm always kind of dual wielding with something else. So the music, but often I think as an alternative the lore and the story behind it. If you've got a fantastic gameplay loop, if you've got that loop, that's often what can pull me through, as opposed to a really good story.
Yeah, I can see that. I think actually the way I'd sit on this whole thing that I hear is kind. I think you need 4 out of 5 of these to be absolutely on it to make
that's
a good game.
Yeah.
That's where I lie down, because I think of it and I go, I know, Ben, you'll probably disagree because the lore behind Elden Ring is great, but Elden Ring nails the other 4. The visuals, the gameplay, the atmosphere, the difficulty, they are all awesome. And then the story is drip-fed. It's very subtle.
I don't disagree at all.
And I think that's a great example.
That's what I mean about a gameplay loop and the gameplay and everything else in the game pulling you through.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you just don't need it, like the story. Yes, there is a story there, and I'm sure you could write a book on it, but I don't need it at all.
Yeah, and there's plenty of others where you could do without atmosphere and music and it's not such a big hit, especially if you're handheld gaming. And there's plenty that you can do without top-notch visuals as long as the other bits are there.
Yes,
and I think it is kind of, if you want a brilliant game, you've got to have 4 of these 5 nailed.
Like, yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's a fair comment.
Yeah, 3. But yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. I wasn't specifying any 480. There was no need to bully it out there, but you know. But if anyone wanted to get in touch and tell us we're all wrong and one of the other ones should be binned off, Ben, how would they do so?
Yeah. Tell us what your most important thing on a game is. It's interesting to hear that we've all gone for gameplay and mechanics. But be interested if anybody else has got anything. Let us know. Mm. You can email us podcast@grumpygamers.co.uk. You can tweet us @grumpygamerspod. Again, YouTube channel, we're putting videos out there all the time, Grumpy Gamers Podcast, and Twitch, Grumpy Gamers Podcast, all one word. Go in there, drop us a follow. We'll be streaming on Thursday. May do some more streams during the week, things like that. But definitely Thursday evening, 7 o'clock.
Yes, indeed. But for this week, I think it's GG.
GG.
GG.